You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
It is the 14th of October, the beginning of a new week, but of course the world turns on and so does the news cycle. And to bring you closer to it and to just wrap up everything that you absolutely have to know in about 20-25 minutes tops is my sole job, and here I am doing it again. My name is Rakesh Sharma and I bring to you Stories of the Day.
You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Let's start things off, as usual, with India business news. The big news doing the rounds today, the finance ministry said loans worth 81,781 crore rupees were disbursed during the nine-day outreach program, or loan mela, organized by banks that began on the 1st of October. Finance Secretary Rajiv Kumar said that of this, new loans accounted for 34,342 crores. Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman said the banks have sufficient liquidity and efforts are being made to ensure that due payments are released to the micro, small and medium enterprises, that is MSME sector, by large corporates. In order to ensure liquidity for small businesses, Sitharaman said that banks have been asked to provide bill discounting facility to the MSME sector against payments due from the large corporates. According to returns filed by the large corporates to the Ministry of Corporate Affairs, as much as 40,000 crore rupees are due to the MSME sector. She said, adding that all efforts would be made to ensure that MSMEs get their dues ahead of Diwali. Meanwhile, wholesale price-based inflation eased to 0.33% in September, as against 1.08% in August due to fall in prices of non-food articles. The annual rate of inflation based on monthly wholesale price index, that is WPI, was at 5.22% in September 2018. The rate of price rise for the food articles was at 7.47% during the month, while that for non-food articles stood at 2.18%. Big news coming from the stock market today. Shares of IRCTC, that is Indian Railway Catering and Tourism Corporation, the online ticketing, tourism and catering arm of railways, made a stellar debut on the bursas by listing at 644 rupees, 101% premium to its issue price of 320 rupees per share on the BSE. It was the Hrithik Roshan of IPO debuts. Since retail investors received shares at a discount of 10 rupees per share, for them, the issue price stands at 310 rupees per share. Post-listing, the stock gained further to up to 674 rupees, 110% premium to the issue price. Around 1.46 million equity shares changed hands on the BSE in the morning. The state-owned company raised 645 crore rupees through its IPO. The issue got a massive response, being oversubscribed 112 times. IRCTC is the only entity authorized by the Indian Railways to provide catering services to railways, online railway tickets and packaged drinking water at railway stations and trains in India. Reliance Securities, in an IPO note, had said IRCTC is in steady business model, which is likely to grow at 12 to 15% in the next few years. The restoration of convenience charges for e-ticket from September 2019 is likely to generate additional revenue of 450 crore rupees. The company has a healthy balance sheet with over 1,100 crore rupees cash to support capex. It also paid around 50% average dividend in the last 3 years. Analysts appear divided on the investment strategy as regards the stock. Some feel IRCTC is a good long-term investment bet given its unique business model and monopoly in the business, while others feel one should get over the listing euphoria following the phenomenal oversubscription and retail investors should utilize this opportunity to exit. So there are two sides. Which one do you fall on is up to you. In some very big news today, French oil major Total SA has signed definitive agreement to buy 37.4% stake in Gautam Adani-led Adani Gas for about 5,700 crore rupees. Total will purchase the shares through a tender offer to public shareholders to acquire up to 25.2% shares. Adani family and Total SA shareholders will ultimately hold 37.4% each, Adani Gas said in a statement. The company said that CGD is a natural extension of the plans of both partners to invest in infrastructure and assets worth over $1 billion, which span LNG, that is liquefied natural gas, infrastructure and marketing, and fuel retail business, announced in October of last year. Adani Gas is also planning to set up 1,500 fuel stations, offering top-of-the-line products in the coming years. The expanded partnership will develop regasification terminals, including Dhamra LNG on the east coast of India, market LNG to the Indian markets, and through Adani Gas, target to distribute gas to 7.5% of India's population. Adani Gas and its joint venture will distribute gas to 6 million households in the next decade. Adani Gas CNG network will be developed exploring synergies, including co-location of fuel retail and CNG outlets, the statement went on to add. In earnings news, Hindustan Unilever had its quarter two earnings out today. It posted a profit of 1,848 crore rupees, that is up 21% year-on-year for the second quarter of FY20. The company had posted a profit of 1,525 crore rupees in the year-ago period. On a consolidated basis, the company posted a net profit of 1,814 crore rupees, up 22.7% year-on-year. Revenue for the quarter came in at 9,852 crore rupees, up 6.7% year-on-year, while EBITDA came in at 2,443 crore rupees, up 21% year-on-year, in line with estimates. The NCLAT, that is the National Company Law Appellate Tribunal, on Monday today asked the Enforcement Directorate to release the attached properties of Bhushan Power and Steel and directed the agency not to attach any further assets without its permission. The Appellate Tribunal also put the 19,700 crore rupee payout by JSW Steel to buy the debt-ridden company on hold till further orders. An NCLAT bench headed by Chairman Justice S.G. Mukhopadhyay slammed the Enforcement Directorate, saying that the IBC would fail if the agency functions like this, and directed it to file a reply in the next 2 days along with the CBI. The ED had seized a portion of Bhushan Power and Steel's assets in the money laundering case against its former promoters. This needs to be said, HCL Technologies chairman Shiv Nadar topped the list of India's most generous philanthropists. He contributed 826 crore rupees during the financial year 2018-2019, that is FY19. Wipro founder Azim Premji was second with 453 crore rupees. Reliance Industries chairman Mukesh Ambani was third with 402 crore rupees. He is, of course, the richest man in Asia. This according to Edelgiv Hurun India philanthropy list of 2019, released today. In some other headlines doing the rounds, Ratan Tata to invest in electric two-wheeler startup Torque Motors. According to a new report, SEBI has banned directors and ex-directors of Fairwealth Securities, Bombay Stock Exchange, to suspend trading in Manpasand Beverages, Binani Industries and 14 others. Starting from the 4th of November, Maruti Suzuki will be collaborating with five startups under the MAIL or MAIL program. And the government is closely monitoring developments at PMC Bank, according to a statement by Nirmala Sitharaman. And toll revenue to swell to 1 lakh crore rupees per annum in the next 5 years. This according to Minister Nitin Gadkari. DPIIT has sought Information and Broadcasting Ministry's views on issues raised on 26% FDI in the digital media sector. Those were some of the big headlines doing the rounds in the fields of finance, economy and business. India business news done. What is going on in India in general? Well, some good news. Mobile phones in Kashmir buzzed back to life today, connecting 40 lakh postpaid subscribers to their families and friends in the country, the valley and their neighborhoods after 72 days. Without any internet facilities, let me reiterate that 72 days. Some people would say depriving somebody of communication with their loved ones in other parts of the world is a gross violation of human rights, but some people in the government do not seem to think so. But let's reiterate that 72 days without any internet facilities or phone connections. And now there seems to be a reprieve for the people of Kashmir. The resumption of the service is only on postpaid connections and only for voice calls and SMSs. Over 25 lakh prepaid mobile phones and other internet services, including WhatsApp, will remain deactivated for now. Connectivity was snapped exactly a week before Eid, celebrated on the 12th of August, just to add insult to injury. And so great was the relief on Monday that many Kashmiris wished each other Eid Mubarak. Security forces are fully geared to meet any challenge arising out of the opening of mobile communications, according to officials. The restoration of postpaid mobile phones of all services stops a number of steps taken in recent weeks to remove restrictions in the valley. valley. But then again, let's reiterate, these valleys were in place in the first place in the name of security. But anyway, last week, the state was opened to tourists. Educational institutions are also open, but attendance has been slim. On the 17th of August, partial fixed-line telephony was resumed in the valley. On the 4th of September, nearly 50,000 landlines were declared operational. Children between the ages of 3 and 6 years should begin their educational journey in their own mother tongues, learn through play and not be subjected to tests of any kind, says the NCERT's first ever preschool curriculum, noting that teaching through a child's mother tongue or home language is internationally recognized as most appropriate in the early years. The NCERT guidelines also acknowledge the challenge of language diversity in India. According to NCERT, and here I quote, in case there are more than one language as mother tongue, teachers may allow as many languages as are in the classroom to be used for expression with gradually exposing the child to school language. Children need a bilingual or multilingual environment for smooth transition. They also added that all children should be exposed to sign language as well. The guidelines emphasize that preschools must avoid early formal instruction. The curriculum went on to say, and I quote, rote-based, teacher-directed learning, which is devoid of meaningful context with undue pressure on the child to perform, is harmful, unquote. It stipulates that children should be assessed individually through informal and systematic observations of their play and activities. On no account should children be made to take any form of test or examination, either oral or written. The purpose of evaluation at the preschool stage is not to label a child as a pass or a fail, went on to say the curriculum. Instead, assessment should provide direction for learning new skills and focus on the child's strengths rather than deficits, it went on to add. Bloomberg had an article that I urge you to read because I'm not going to read out the whole thing to you or even summarize it to you because I want you to read it yourself, which is a story that talks about how a year into the Me Too movement in India, how the cases have played out. To say the least, it is a bit disheartening, and this is why I'm just pointing you to the article and I want you to read it in detail and see what it takes for a woman to come out with her story and what it means after. Coming out itself takes so much courage, and after that, how society treats you, and to see not much recourse being taken is adding insult to injury. So do be sure to read that piece that Bloomberg has about a year of the Me Too movement in India. To say it in one word, disappointing. Well, get ready for BCCI President Sourav Ganguly, all set to be the new BCCI President. The 47-year-old Sourav Ganguly is currently the President of Cricket Association of Bengal and will have to demit his post in September 2020 as he will go into compulsory cooling-off period. This has been, of course, a dramatic turn of events as Ganguly emerged as consensus candidate to BCCI's new president after Brijesh Patel appeared to have grabbed the coveted post. Union Home Minister Amit Shah's son Jai Shah will be the new secretary, while Arun Dhumal will be the new treasurer. Dhumal is younger brother of Minister of State Finance and former BCCI President Anurag Thakur. Nepotism in India? Ha! Never happens. Monday is the last day to file nomination, but no election will be held since all candidates have emerged unopposed after weeks of lobbying and hectic parleys. BCCI is, of course, the richest cricketing body in the world. Brijesh Patel was, of course, backed by Tamil Nadu's strongman N. Srinivasan, and he emerged presidential candidate when Ganguly remained non-committal on campaigning for the BJP in the 2021 state assembly elections. The choice for president's post was always between Ganguly and Brijesh Patel, and Ganguly was finally accepted as a unanimous candidate. When the new office bearers assume office, it will end a 33-month, almost three-year term of the Committee of Administrators, which called shots in running the cricket affairs in country post the Lodha committee reforms. Former India coach Anshuman Gaikwad beat Kirti Azad to be elected as male ICA representative on BCCI's 9-member Apex Council. Shantaranga Swamy was earlier elected unopposed as female ICA representative. The Supreme Court today refused to entertain a plea seeking mandatory linking of social media accounts with Aadhaar. Everything doesn't need to come to the Supreme Court. This issue is before the Madras High Court. You go there, the SC bench told petitioner Ashwini Upadhyay. The Times of India reports that according to the petitioner, the plea was filed to check the menace of fake and paid news and sought a direction from the centre to deactivate duplicate and fake social media accounts. The plea also sought directions to the centre for apposite steps to declare publication of paid news and political advertisements 48 hours before an election as a corrupt practice. under the Representation of People Act of 1951. It claimed that 10% of the 3.5 crore Twitter handles were duplicate, which included hundreds in the names of eminent people such as chief ministers and even the president and prime minister of the country. In some wonderful news, Pranjal Patil, India's first visually impaired woman IAS officer, has taken over as the sub-collector of Kerala's Thiruvananthapuram. Ms. Patil, 30 years old, made history last year when she received her first appointment as assistant collector in Kerala's Ernakulam. We should never be defeated. We should not give up. Because with all our efforts, we will definitely get that one breakthrough moment that we are waiting for. Those were the words of Ms. Patil while speaking to the media on her first day at the office of Thiruvananthapuram's sub-collector. She also said that she will chalk out a plan of action for the city's administration. First of all, congratulations are in order for Abhijit Binayak Banerjee, an Indian-American economist of Bengali heritage who has won the 2019 Nobel Prize in Economic Sciences for his work in the field of development economics with particular emphasis on alleviating global poverty. The Nobel citation went on to say, this prize has been awarded to Abhijit Banerjee, Esther Duflo and Michael Kramer for their experimental approach to alleviating global poverty. Banerjee co-founded the Abdul Latif Jameel Poverty Action Lab, that is JPAL, along with Esther Duflo and Sendil Mullainathan. He is a research affiliate of Innovations for Poverty Action and is a member of the Consortium on Financial Systems and Poverty. He is the Ford Foundation International Professor of Economics at Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Esther Duflo, who has been awarded the prize with him, was one of his doctoral students, in fact, at MIT. Abhijit was a joint supervisor of Esther's PhD in economics at MIT in 1999. She's also a professor of poverty alleviation and development economics at MIT. Abhijit and Esther are married and have a child together. With the announcement of the Economics Prize, we have come to the end of Nobel announcement days. It all began with the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine, which was announced last week on Monday, which was given to William Kalin Jr., Peter Radcliffe and Greg Semenza for their discoveries of how cells sense and adapt to oxygen availability. The next day, that is on the 8th of October, the Nobel Prize in Physics was awarded with one half to James Peebles for theoretical discoveries in physical cosmology and the other half jointly to Michael Mayer and Didier Queloz for the discovery of an exoplanet orbiting a solar-type star. On the 9th of October last week, the Nobel Prize in Chemistry was awarded to John B. Goodenough, M. Stanley Whittingham and Akira Yoshino for the development of lithium-ion batteries. On Thursday, the Nobel Prize in Literature for 2018 was awarded to Polish author Olga Tokarczuk for a narrative imagination that, with encyclopedic passion, represents the crossing of boundaries as a form of life. And the Nobel Prize for 2019 was awarded to the Austrian author Peter Handke for an influential work that, with linguistic ingenuity, has explored the periphery and the specificity of human experiences. Those are, of course, what the committee said in their announcements. Those are not my words. Peter Handke's victory has met with a lot of criticism already. And the reason why the 2018 award was announced this year was because the Nobel Committee last year for literature itself was embroiled in a lot of Me Too controversies. On the 11th of October, last Friday, the Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed Ali for his efforts to achieve peace and international cooperation, and in particular for his decisive initiative to resolve the border conflict with neighboring Eritrea. And this, the Sveriges Riksbank Prize in Economic Sciences in memory of Alfred Nobel, has been awarded to Abhijit Banerjee, Esther Duflo and Michael Kramer. In news from the conflict between Turkey and Syria, Kurdish-led forces in control of northeast Syria have reached a deal with the Assad regime to stave off a bloody 5-day-old Turkish assault, as more than 700 people with links to Islamic State have escaped from a detention camp in the area. This was a danger that people were anticipating upon the announcement that the US would be withdrawing its troops. This report comes from The Guardian that the Kurdish fighters controlling the region would surrender the border towns of Manbij and Kobane to Damascus in a deal brokered by Russia. This according to officials on Sunday night. Syrian state media said units from President Bashar al-Assad's army were moving north to confront Turkish aggression on Syrian territory. Unconfirmed confirmed reports said the deal between the Kurds and Assad's regime would be extended to apply to the whole of northeast Syria. Ismat Sheikh Hassan, who is the leader of the military council in Kobane, told television, local television, and I quote, "After everything, it seems that the fate of the Kurdish people is to be abandoned. We did everything that we could. We called upon the international community, but it did not result in a solution. We urged all Kurdish groups to show solidarity, but no one listened," unquote. The deal is likely to be a bitter end to 5 years of semi-autonomy for Kurdish groups in northeastern Syria, forced by Ankara's offensive on the area. Turkey's Operation Peace Spring, as Erdogan decided to call it, started on Wednesday last week after Donald Trump's announcement that US forces would withdraw from the region. Trump, of course, had not specified a time frame for the US withdrawal from Syria, but on Sunday, Defense Secretary Mark Esper said the remaining 1,000 special forces in the country had been ordered to leave as safely and as quickly as possible, as the fighting between Turkey and Syrian Democratic Forces, that is SDF, which is a Kurdish-led militia, began to threaten US military positions. Reacting to the Hong Kong protests, President Xi Jinping of China has warned of bodies smashed and bones ground to powder, saying any attempt to divide China will result in those. Xi Jinping's comments came during a state visit to Nepal yesterday, Chinese state broadcaster CCTV said. He didn't mention any particular region, but it was seen as a warning to Hong Kong, where anti-Beijing protests have been ongoing for months. Peaceful rallies in Hong Kong again descended into clashes yesterday. Public transport stations and shops deemed to be pro-Beijing were damaged. What did he exactly say? Anyone who attempts to split any region from China will perish with their bodies smashed and bones ground to powder. This is particularly strong language coming from Xi Jinping. He also went on to say any external forces that support the splitting of China can only be regarded as delusional by the Chinese people. Since the beginning of the Hong Kong protest movement about 4 months ago, China has blamed external forces for fueling the unrest and accused the US and UK of interfering in Chinese domestic affairs. Why are these comments notable? Well, he has yet to make any direct comment on the ongoing protests. Even this time, he didn't refer to Hong Kong. So this indirect allusion to what is going on in Hong Kong and the very strong reaction to it is rare and comes off as a strong warning. Beijing has so far said it believes Hong Kong's police force is capable of handling the crisis, but protesters fear Beijing could send in troops to end the violence on the streets. This is widely seen as an unlikely scenario because, of course, of the serious consequences. Few observers believe China would repeat its 1989 crackdown on pro-democracy activists in Tiananmen Square, as we know very well, for examples where hundreds are believed to have died. But what is going on in Hong Kong has been democratic protests against the growing Beijing influence in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is, of course, a part of China, but has a high level of autonomy. It has its own legal system. It has its own justice system and far more freedoms than the people do have on the mainland. There has, of course, been growing anti-Beijing sentiment for some time now. But this latest wave of protests started in June. It was, of course, triggered by a proposal to bring in a new law, which would have meant criminal suspects could be sent to mainland China to stand trial. Many people were afraid that this law could end up being used by the government in Beijing to persecute Hong Kongers who criticized mainland China's government. Critics have also said it would undermine Hong Kong's judicial independence. The government, of course, responded to the initial massive protests, with almost a sixth of Hong Kong taking part in widely peaceful protests, by saying that the bill would be withdrawn. But by that point, the protests had already escalated. The protesters now want their five demands to be met, which include full democracy for Hong Kong and an inquiry into what they say has been an excessive use of force by the police. Only last week, there was one of the protesters being shot by the Hong Kong police. That had not happened thus far. More than 2,300 people have been arrested since the civil disobedience began, and several of them are children, as news reports came out, about 700 of them under 16. The protests are, of course, still ongoing. There was one that went yesterday as well. Turning to Spain now, which is also in the throes of a movement, Spain's Supreme Court has sentenced 9 Catalan separatist leaders to between 9 and 13 years in prison for sedition over their role in an independence referendum in 2017. Three other defendants were found guilty of disobedience and fined but will not serve prison sentences. The 12 politicians and activists had all denied the charges. In response to the verdicts, Catalan independence supporters marched in Barcelona before blocking some streets. What is the Catalonia crisis, you might be wondering, and this is as good a time as any to understand what is going on there. Catalonia's drive for independence plunged Spain into its biggest political crisis for 40 years. Barcelona is in that part of the region that is called Catalan. It is, as of now, part of Spain, but the Spanish culture is very different from Catalan culture. There is a different language altogether, and they've been seeking independence for about 40 years. So what is Catalonia? It's a semi-autonomous region in northeast Spain with a distinct history, which dates back to almost 1,000 years. It is a wealthy region. It has about 7.5 million people, their own language, parliament, flag, anthem, everything different. Catalonia also has its own police force and controls some of its public services. So what is the controversy? Catalan nationalists have long complained that their region sends too much money to poorer parts of Spain, as taxes are still controlled by Madrid, the capital of Spain. They also say Spain's changes to their autonomous status in 2010 undermined Catalan identity. In a referendum on the 1st of October 2017, declared illegal by Spain's constitutional court, about 90% of Catalan voters backed independence, but turnout was only 43%, and there were clashes when Spanish National Police tried to prevent people from voting. The ruling separatists in the Catalan parliament then declared independence on the 27th of October. Angered by that, Madrid imposed direct rule by invoking what is called Article 155 of the Constitution, which was the first time that it happened in Spain. The Spanish government sacked the Catalan leaders, dissolved parliament, and called a snap regional election back in December 2017, as you might recall, which nationalist parties won. Now, in June 2018, Catalan nationalists regained control of the region from Madrid's direct rule after new government was sworn in. Quim Torra, who is a close ally of Senor Puigdemont, who is the former Catalan president who ran away and is wanted in Spain, accused of rebellion. And this fellow, Quim Torra, who is an ally of Puigdemont, now leads the regional government. And now the Supreme Court in Spain has delivered that verdict. A super typhoon is wreaking havoc in Japan. Super typhoon Hagibis hit Japan on the 12th of October, and millions of citizens in the Tokyo area and beyond have been ordered to evacuate their homes. Amid heavy rains, flooding and life-threatening winds, so far 31 people have already died and 186 others have been injured. The typhoon became the longest-lived super typhoon of 2019 last week before it made landfall but weakened to a tropical depression on Sunday yesterday. Evacuation advisories affected tens of millions of people, and hundreds of thousands are still without power following its impact. To make matters even more complicated, the country is hosting the World Rugby Championships. Several matches had to be preemptively cancelled because of the storm, but a pivotal match between Japan and Scotland did go ahead, with the host nation prevailing to claim a quarterfinal spot. It was a much-needed bright moment before the long, grim period of recovery sets in Japan in the aftermath of Super Typhoon Hagibis. And in impeachment news, lawmakers returned to Capitol Hill this week with House Democrats set to accelerate their impeachment inquiry against President Donald Trump. First up, CNN said, interviews with the president's former top Russia advisor and testimony from U.S. Ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland, whose texts we have seen, who's a key witness whose earlier scheduled appearance was cancelled at the last minute due to objections from the State Department. Top Trump administration officials, including the vice president and Energy Department secretary, also face deadlines this week to turn over documents related to the Ukraine investigation, some voluntarily and some under subpoena. CNN goes on to note that Democrats face growing pressure from liberal members and activists to vote as soon as Thanksgiving, a timeline that would allow the House to avoid running into the heart of the 2020 primary season. At the same time, House Democratic leaders want to appear to be methodically collecting evidence over what they view as an abuse of power by the president in urging the Ukrainian government to investigate his potential political rival Joe Biden, at the same time as U.S. aid to the country had been stalled. There is, as of now, no evidence of wrongdoing by Joe Biden. Did you know that our Jesus shoes are on sale for $4,000? The shoes were designed by Brooklyn-based creative arts company MSCHF, and they come with holy water in the soles. MSCHF bought a normal pair of Nike Air Max 97 sneakers at market value, and a plain pair of men's Air Max 97s actually go for $160. But this company completely revamped the shoe and added a golden Jesus on a crucifix as a shoelace charm. The company also sourced holy water from the River Jordan, which was blessed by a priest in Brooklyn, and added it to the soles of the sneaker. As you know, St. John baptized Jesus for the first time at the River Jordan. The new Jesus shoes went on sale for $1,425 Tuesday last week and sold for that price within a minute. The buyer has now listed the sneaker on the resale website StockX for $4,000. With that, all the news you absolutely had to know has now come to an end, but I would be remiss if I didn't tell you what happened on Dalal Street today. At the end of the day, there were mild gains on Dalal Street on both the Sensex and the Nifty. It's a second consecutive day of rise. After rising around 1% in the intraday deals, benchmark indices lost slight momentum in the last hour of trade. Sensex was up 87 points to close at 38,214. Nifty gained about 25 points to end at 11,329.8. TCS, Axis Bank, ONGC, HDFC Bank and Bharti Airtel contributed the most to Sensex's gains, while Infosys and Bajaj Finance were the top losers of the day.
You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
That is it, Bhaiyor Beno and Anna Tangire, etc., etc. I will, of course, be back first thing in the morning with a morning walk down Dalal Street and stock picks of the day to ensure that your day goes smoothly and with proper guidance, because that is precisely what we do all day long. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been today's Editor's Pick. And you've been listening to Money Control.
And now a word on a subscription product. Money Control Pro offers curated market data, independent equity analysis, exclusive trading recommendations, and actionable investment ideas to subscribers. In the great Diwali discount offer, you can get access to Money Control Pro for as little as Rs. 289 for 1 year. Use code Diwali. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app.